So today is the 14th of Cheshvan, the 12th of November, and we are finishing Shmuel Bet Perek Yod Dalet. Okay, so to repeat the pasuk from last time, Ve'yomer Melech Yisovel Beito Upanai Lo Yireh. So the king said he should go the roundabout way to his house, and my face he will not see. Ve'yisovel Avshalom El Beito, and Avshalom indeed did that, Upanai HaMelech Lo Ra'ah, and he did not see the face of the king. And then you can kind of see just the way it's set up that there's these chunks, paragraph chunks. So it's not united, it's very fractured. And I think that speaks to the fractured aspect of what's going on in the royal household right now. Okay, so let's read each chunk and then look at the commentary for each one. Okay, so this first chunk is actually very strange. We've just gotten this word that Avshalom came back and he didn't see the face of the king, and then we have this non sequitur about Avshalom's beauty. Okay, Avshalom lo haya ish yafe b'kol Yisrael lahalel me'od mikaf raglo ve'ad kadkato lo haya bo mum. So there was no other man in all of Israel as beautiful as Avshalom to praise him very much from the sole of his foot to the top of his head. He had no flaw. Ubigalcho et rosho, v'haya miketz yamim leyamim, asher yigaleach ki kaved alav, v'gilcho v'shakal et sa'ar rosho, matayim shekalim be'evin hamelech. So he would shave his head, and yamim here, even though it usually means days, there are many times where it means years. So he would shave his head every year, and his hair was so heavy upon shaving that it weighed 200 shekalim with the stone of the king, so he would weigh it. Vayivaldu l'Avshalom shlosha banim, uvat echat, ushma tamar, hi hayta isha yafat mar'eh. So Avshalom had three sons and one daughter whose name was Tamar, and we mentioned this with the story of the rape of Tamar, that Tamar probably had to live out her days alone in Avshalom's house. And it speaks to, Avshalom is a very complicated character, because we're going to see his behavior going forward is pretty horrendous, awful. It's an understatement. And yet, he did protect his sister to the point where he avenged her rape, and he, to the point where he even named a daughter after her so she'd have some sort of continuation. It's interesting, we don't even hear the names of the sons, and that is going to come out. So then, if you see the next pasuk, we'll just read it. Vayeshav Avshalom b'Yerushalayim shnatayim yamim upnei hamelech lo ra'ah. So Avshalom sat there for 2 years and he never saw the king's face. And I mentioned in our little introduction that it was 2 years before he sought his revenge on Avner and killed him. On Amnon. So many Aleph names. Aleph Nayim names. So on Amnon and killed him. So he has a certain amount of patience that seems to expire after 2 years. But he's very thoughtful in the way that he goes about doing things, and we'll see in a little bit what he does after 2 years here. But let's go to the commentary. So there's a few different opinions that we're going to look at as to why we have this non sequitur to talk about his beauty and the weight of his hair. And you probably, if you know the story to the end, he actually, his hair is what does him in. It gets snagged in the boughs of the trees, and he was literally hanging by his hair on the trees. So it might be a little foreshadowing in that sense. Nobody mentions that here, though. Okay, so the first explanation we're going to look at is a radak. Okay, Avshalom lo haya ish yafe. Samuch l'sipur hamered shemarad be'aviv siper magaram loza. So his official rebellion against his father is going to start with the next sections, and it's really going to come into play the next chapter. We're going to see it kind of, the commentators see hints at how it's brewing in this chapter, but we're really going to see it in the next chapter. So the Radak is saying that we need to hear about his beauty before the rebellion officially starts, because that's what caused it. Ki haya yafe uvekol Yisrael lo haya kamohu. So there's nobody as beautiful as him. Venitzga ebi yofyav, and he has pride in his beauty. Ubisa'aro, and his hair. Vechashav ki in ra'ui lamalucha mibnei David kamohu. And he thought, he's the most fitting to be the king, to be the next king. There's nobody else like him. Umarad, and therefore he rebelled. Ulai shama ki belev hamelch lamlich Shlomo. Maybe he had heard that it was in the heart of the king to appoint Shlomo as the next king after him. Umarad al aviv bechayav veganav lev Yisrael. And he rebelled against his father during his father's lifetime. Hi. And he stole the heart of Israel. It's interesting, just to go back even further, his beauty is not reminiscent of his father David. For David, we're told that he was ruddy, that he was Adom. And we spent a lot of time talking about the similarities with Esav, with being red like that. And who was beautiful and head and shoulders above all the people? Shaul, the king before him. And we actually get the expression head and shoulders above from Shaul. That's how he's described. And when Shmuel came to anoint the next king, he was only told it's going to be a son of Yishai, of Jesse. And each one of the sons was more tall and fit than the next. And Hashem had to keep saying, no, it's not him. No, it's not him. No, it's not him. He had eight sons. And at the very end, he's like, it wasn't any of them. He said, do you have any more sons? He's like, oh, there's the little shepherd boy. And that was David HaMelech, who was the king. So, and we do the same thing, Lahavdiel, in our day and age in terms of who we vote as president. I was just listening to a discussion of the latest man to put his hat in the ring, and everyone was saying he doesn't have the television presence to do it. So, so there could be something to Absalom, knowing that his looks was an asset in terms of winning over the people of the country, and we're just as superficial today, and having a successful rebellion. Okay, so Joanna, we have Absalom is back in Israel, and the king refuses to see him, and we have this, before we go into that story, we have this little non sequitur about Absalom's beauty. So we're wondering, what is that doing there? So Radak says it's the source of the rebellion. But if it really were the source of the rebellion, it wouldn't be here. It would be at the end of this chapter, right before the actual rebellion starts, right? If it really wanted to connect. So a lot of the commentaries are not satisfied with the Radak. So now the Alshich. So I actually gave you, because I've been mentioning him a few times and I always forget the details, I gave you a little biography of Alshich. So he was 16th century, born in Turkey. But he immigrated to Israel and was in Sfat, where he became a dayan in the rabbinical court headed by Rav Yosef Kaira. So, and these are his Sabbath sermons and discourses that were published. So he's really interesting. And usually, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I skip him because he's so long. He's so wordy. But he's, every once in a while, he really catches my eye and has really insightful things to say. I'm sure he always has insightful things to say, but most of the time it's too long, I skip him. Okay, so here I thought it was really interesting. Okay, so Ra'ui Lassim Lev, top of page 2, Mazo Smichut El Hakodim. So he's saying we need to pay attention to what this seemingly non sequitur has to do with what came before it. Vigam al inyan gilucho ubanav ubeito. And not only just the beauty part, but also the shaving his head part and his children and his, that might mean daughter, which it's bito. I guess the yod is there because we do pronounce it bito. Usually you don't have a yod there. Ach hine yadua ki haroe briut naut chayav lehalel Hashem. So you guys know, if you've ever looked at the list of brachot in art school, maybe you've had an opportunity to actually say this bracha, but there is a special bracha to say when you see an exceptionally beautiful human being. Okay? So it's brachot Hashem el kenu malchalam shekacha lo be'olamo, that this is in his world. V'navo el ha'inyan. So now we'll get to the matter. Amar ki gam achar sheshalach ha'melech acharei Absalom. So after the king sent for Absalom, Lo haya yachol lehistakel b'fanav. He couldn't look at his face. Ve'amar panai lo yira'ah. And he said, my face will not be seen. Amar ra'a ma gadal ke'ev hamelech al Amnon. So he's saying the hurt, the pain that he still has on Amnon. Uma'us b'rahaza. And he's disgusted by this evil. Ki im hayot sheke'av shalom. Because there was no one as physically praiseworthy as Absalom, shehuna el halal et Hashem od, because he was so praiseworthy to praise God very much. ulevarech birkat haro'eh briyot na'ot biyoter, and to say this special bracha when you see an extraordinarily beautiful person. V'im kol zeh lo haya yechol David lehita'apek lehabit alav. And with all this, he couldn't restrain himself from looking upon him. Im shiyavarech v'yahalel lehashem shikacha lo b'yam olamo. Because then he would have had to say this bracha. I think that's what Al-Sheikh is saying, that he did. David did not want to see him because what he did was so disgusting, and he knew that if he were to see him, he wouldn't be able to restrain himself from really looking at him and saying this bracha for this man who did this disgusting act of killing his brother. Isn't that interesting? Okay, so now the Malbim is going to give us his impression, which I think is similar to the Abarvanel, which was too wordy. But at least with the Abarvanel, we have the alternate of the Malbim, who says similar things, but in much more succinct manner. Okay, so again, our same question. Lama hifsik b'sipur yofyav shel Avshalom be'emtza. Why does it give over Avshalom's beauty in the middle? Milvad she'en mekomo po. Its place should not be here. V'havali lichtov tchila kol ha'sipur ad v'yishak ha'melech l'Avshalom. It should have been after the end of this chapter. We're going to see that King David kisses Avshalom, and then right after that is the rebellion. Why didn't Avshalom rebel before he saw his father's face? Why did Avshalom wait so long? He had this anger. It wasn't just after his father brought him close and kissed him. Umara al kacha limrod ve'aviv, v'hu haya gadol ve'achiv ben yoresh atzar ve'aviv zaken v'lama meher limrod shelo v'kisha Avshalom. Okay, so what did he see to rebel now? While he was the oldest of his brothers, he should have been the one to inherit everything, and his father was old. What was the rush to rebel? Hapsukim habaim hem kidmut hakdama lehodia hasiba sheheniya et lev Avshalom el hamered hakadol hazel limrod ba'aviv. So really, these psukim, I think kidmut hakdama, you could translate it as foreshadowing, to tell you the reason why the heart of Avshalom was moved to do this great rebellion, to rebel against his father. Hine Avshalom haya ben habachor acharei mot Amnon. So Avshalom was indeed now the current firstborn after the death of Amnon. V'chein mitzad yofyav u'malotav chashav ki lo yata hamalucha. And he also saw from the aspect of his stature and his beauty that the kingship shouldn't be withheld from him. V'aviv haya b'dato limlichet Shlomo. But the king had in mind to make Shlomo the king. Imitzad sin ato le'Avshalom, whether it was because of his hatred to Avshalom, imitzad shamar le'hanavi, or whether it was because he got actual word from the Navi, hine ben nolad lecha, where he said, and we saw that before, I don't know why those question marks are in there, they weren't my question marks, they were in the copy and paste, so that this son would be born to you and he would be king. V'yeter benav kfar noldu kodim lechein, and the rest of his brothers were all born before that. So it was an announcement by the Navi that he would be the king. V'gam pratlo shehaben hamolad yikara b'shem Shlomo, and he also told him that this son would be called Shlomo. V'gam kfar nishva l'bat sheva sheshlomo bana yimloch acharav, and he had already promised to bat sheva that the king would be he would be the king after him. So the Malbim is explaining why Avshalom would have rushed to rebellion during the lifetime of his father, knowing he's the firstborn. And we kind of have to explain, it seemed like a lot of the commentaries weren't so sure that Avshalom would know that it was already promised to Shlomo and that would be his motivation. And so he's explaining the course of events, how Avshalom might have known this and that would hasten his rebellion. So he already promised Bathsheba. And that's in Malachim Aleph, I think it's in the past perfect, he'd already promised. V'kasher hirgish Avshalom zot, and when Avshalom felt this, or sensed this, ayidei shara'as sin ataviv alav, when he saw that his father in fact hated him, hagam shel lo yada minivuat Natan, even if he didn't know the prophecy of Natan, l'chein hikdim limrod term yamlich et Shlomo b'chayav, therefore he hurried to rebel, before he would make Shlomo the king during his lifetime, kamo shahaya achar kach be'emet, as what indeed happened. David crowned Shlomo in his lifetime. It wasn't after he died. וזה שמר כהוצאה אל מעשה המרד שיספר בסימנים הבאה. And this was came out of this action, this rebellion, that's told in the next sections. וכאבשלום לא היה איש יפה, Avshalom was the most beautiful man, וראה את עצמו הגון למחות, and therefore he saw himself as fitting to be king, מצד שלמות יופייו, because of the perfectness of his beauty, הנודע להלל בכל ישראל, that was known to be praised in all of Israel, ולא היה בו שום מום, and he didn't have any flaws. So he saw he would have the popular vote, he knew everyone, he was praised by everyone in Israel, and that this was his opportunity.
According to the notes here, the Radak agrees with that, the Barbanel does not.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. And
Ibar Benel thinks it's a measure of David's righteousness that despite the how beautiful this guy was, that he wouldn't talk to him, wouldn't see him.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Okay, so now more on the Al-Sheikh on this. Most of the commentary is just on this little section. But okay. So Lizeh Amar ubegachot rosho. So about his shaving his head. Lehu bihis kirmam ramzal. So he's going to bring this really interesting little story from the Gemara, from Nedarim. Shamar Shimon HaTzadik. So Shimon HaTzadik was a Kohen Gadol during the Second Temple. Mimai lo achalti mikorban nazir. So Shimon HaTzadik says, in his entire life, he never ate from the korban of a nazir. So the nazir is the one who makes the oath to grow his hair out, right? So there's a theory in the Gemara, I didn't include any of the sources here because I felt like this source was enough, that the reason why it talks about him shaving his head is because he had taken on a lifetime Nazir commitment. So the lifetime Nazir commitment, you would think, would never shave your head, but it would get to the point where it'd be unwieldy, so he was allowed to shave his head, and that's why he shaved his head at these very long intervals between time, because he had this lifetime commitment to be a Nazir. So now Shimon HaTzadik is saying, he never partook in the Nazir Korban. And we're going to find out why. Ela pam echad, only one time, sheba lefanai bachur echad tzach ve'adom. So a young man came to him, tzach ve'adom, that's actually the adjectives used to describe David HaMelech, like readiness. Yafet toar ve'yafet mar'ah, also beautiful, which is also used to describe David HaMelech. So I partially take back what I said before. David is described as beautiful, but not in the way Avshalom or Shaul were, where it was like everyone recognized his beauty. Kibbutzotav tatalim. He had luscious locks. I'm going to translate that as, okay? Vehevi korban nazir, and he brought the nazir korban. Amarti lo bini, mara ita lindor ben nazir. He said to him, my son, why did you make this vow of a nazir? Amarli, he said to me, pam echat halachti im tzon abba lahashkotam b'mayim. One day, I was walking with my father's sheep to bring them to water. V'histakalti b'mayan, and I looked in the pool. V'ra'iti b'voa sheli v'zacha dati alai. And I saw sort of my presence, and my mind went on to myself. Ki ra'iti kvutzote tatalim al hamayim. I saw my luscious locks on the water. Amarti, atamit ga'e. I said, you are prideful. By your life, I am going to shave these luscious locks for the sake of heaven. As chabko v'nashku, then he hugged him and he kissed him. Ve'amar kamotcha yerbu nodrei nezirut. There should be more people who take the vow of nezirut like you be Israel, in Israel. Klomar shaloya kinodrim shalo lashim shamayim ki'im mitoch kas. Because most people, when they make this vow, it's not l'shem shamayim, it's rather out of anger. So this was the first and only time in Shimon HaTzadik's life that he saw a nazir who made his vow for the proper reasons, and it was at l'shem shamayim. B'na'vo el ha'inyan amar. And let's bring this to our matter. Ein l'hachzik lo tova al nezirotu. We can't think highly of Avshalom just because he decided to become a nazir. If it would be to subdue his own yetzer, his evil inclination, like the young man mentioned in the story, then it would be good. But this was not Avshalom's purpose. Ki lo nadar legalech sa'ara l'shamayim. He didn't make the vow to shave his head for the sake of heaven. Ki adarabah. Rather, it was the opposite. Hayam mitzga'e b'sa'aro. He was prideful of his hair. Ki halo lo lehachnia yitzro hayam mekavein. It wasn't to subdue his evil inclination. Lema'etz behadar yofyav. In order to minimize his beauty. Ki im kein hayam megalech mishloshim yom v'keotze. If that were the case, he would have shaved his head every 30 days, which would have been allowed. If he wanted to destroy his locks, that if that was his intention. But he waited as long as possible before he shaved his hair. Because during the days where he didn't have to, he didn't want to destroy his beauty. Rak al ki kaved alav is only because it got too heavy and unwieldy. Ach adarabah haya migadal sa'ara lihitpa'er bo. Therefore, he grew his locks out to glorify himself. V'haraya ki, and the proof of this is that he would weigh it to be 200 shekel. That's completely unwieldy. Be'ofen ki lahakel machmat kovdo haya migalchel. So to lessen his honor, he would shave v'lo lehashchit hadaro, but not to destroy his beauty. Ki adarava haya mitka'e b'se'aro, he was so prideful in his hair, v'ein lomar ki haya na'ar, and we can't say that he was just a young boy, v'derech na'arim lesel b'se'aram, v'lehit na'ot, and young men would play with their hair. We see this with Yosef before the story of Potiphar, that he would look in the mirror and do his hair. So we can't say that that was the case with Avshalom. Why not? Ki halo v'yevaldulo shlosha banim abat echad, he already had four children. V'im kol zeh haya bo ma'asei na'arut. And with all this, with being a grown man with four children, he still acted like a young man. V'lo od ele ki hu haya yafe mar'eh, but rather he was also beautiful. V'haya lo lehit ne'ot b'yofi yaldav. He should have enjoyed the beauty of his children. V'lo lehit ka'ot b'yofi atzmo. And not to be prideful of his own beauty. He says a lot of interesting psychological things about Avshalom. Okay, so Malbim, sorry, one more thing, because we already read about his children. Malbim has a different take on the mentioning of his children. So Al-Sheikh would say the mentioning of his children shows that he's a grown man, and this was not just some youthful pridefulness in his hair. The Malbim says, V'gam nildu lo shosha banim, v'kulam metu be'etahi. He says all three of his sons died at that time. K'mo shekatuv l'kaman yurchet. So I didn't include this here. We're going to go over it to him when we get to chapter 18. In chapter 18, Avshalom says, I have no heirs. Like, I have no one to follow me. And so, but we see here that he did indeed have three sons. So one of the explanations is that they all died. And that's why he put up this pillar during his lifetime, as we're going to see when we get to chapter 18. And he called it in his own name because he didn't have a son. And it's from this aspect that he had the desire to be king, that his name would be eternal. So that's why we know they had children, but they died according to the Malbim. And we read this pasuk already. Vayashev Avshalom Yerushalayim shnatayim yamim upnei hamelech lo ra'ah. Despite the fact that Avshalom, according to the Malbim, had three sons who all died during this time period, King David never sought out to see him. V'lo ba hamelech lenachmo al mitat banav, and he never came to comfort him on the death of his sons. V'hine ze orer oto shinit al hamered. This was the second thing that awakened him to do the rebellion. Shira'a sinat hamelech alav. He saw the hatred of the king on him. Ad shelo haya makom shedavid yamlich oto. And he knew David would never, ever make him king. Okay, so a few different opinions as to why we have this seemingly non sequitur about Avshalom's beauty, shaving his head, and the birth of his children, and how that all led to the rebellion. Okay, so now let's read. We're not at the rebellion yet, but let's read what happens. Okay, so it's been 2 years. So Pasuk Kaf Tet, the second Pasuk in that chunk. And you'll notice I bolded all the verbs of Shalach. So Rav Bazak has always made a point in saying, and I think now we get the point, the first Shlichut was David to Batsheva. The second shlichut we saw was David sending Tamar to Amnon, and now we're seeing another shlichut, and they all are not good. The outcomes of these things are not good when we start seeing shlichut repeated a lot of times. Okay, so Veishlach Avshalom el Yoav, Lishloch oto el Hamelch. So Avshalom sent to Yoav as the chief of staff to try to be the intermediary to send him to the king. V'loav alavo alav, but he didn't want to come to him. So Yoav didn't want to come to Avshalom. V'yishlach od sheinit v'loav alavod. And he sent him another time, he didn't want to come. You can imagine the precarious position of Yoav knowing David didn't want to see him, that he didn't even want to start with Avshalom because there was nothing he could do. Lamed v'yomer el avadav. So now speaking to his servants again, the last time he spoke to his servants, they killed Amnon. Re'u chalkat Yoav al yadi. See this portion of land that Yoav has next to me. Vilo sham se'orim, and he has barley there. Lechu v'hatzituha ba'esh. Go light it on fire. V'hatzituha v'yavshalom et chalka ba'esh. And his servants did just that. I'm wondering who these servants are and all the things they're willing to do for Avshalom. It might also give us a sense of why Avshalom was initially so successful in his rebellion, that he probably had this magical charisma and people just listened to him with his beauty. Okay, so now Avshalom has set Yoav's field on fire. So what happens next? Ve'yakam Yoav ve'yavol Avshalom. Yoav finally comes to Avshalom, habayta, to his house. Ve'yomer elav, lametzitu avadecha chelka, asher li ba'ish. Why did your servant set my field on fire? Lamevet, ve'yomer Avshalom el Yoav. Avshalom said to Yoav, hinei shalachti alecha. I sent for you. Le'mor ba'hina ve'ashalcha otcha el hamelch. Come here, and that I may send you to the king to say, Lemor, Lama Bati Mikshur, why did I come all the way from Geshur? Tovli od Anisham, it would have been better for me to stay there. Vata erepne hamelch, v'im yeshbo avon v'hamitani. Now I want to see the face of the king, and if there's some iniquity against me, so let him kill me. But don't keep me in this limbo state of being banished in my own land. Lamagimel vayavo Yoav el hamelch. So Yoav went to the king vayegedlo, and he told him vayikra el Avshalom, and he called to Avshalom vayavo el hamelch, and Avshalom came to the king vishtachulo, and he bowed to them el alapav, on his face, so a full spread eagle bow, artsa, to the ground lifnei hamelch, before the king vayishach hamelch le Avshalom, and the king kissed to Avshalom. I'm specifically stressing that lamed. We're going to see why soon enough. Okay, so now the commentary. So this is all from the Malbim. V'lachein tziva lehatzit chalkat Yoav. So this is why he commanded to burn the land of Yoav. Ba'asher chashav ki hara lo b'ma she'otzil migeshor. Because he thought it was bad what Yoav did to him, so he's sort of seeking revenge on Yoav. Because remember, Avshalom wasn't there with the whole wise woman of Tekoa. He didn't know what Yoav's intentions were or what his motivations were. He thought that it was just to shame him, maybe, that he would come back to Jerusalem, but his father would never see him. He didn't know that Yoav really wanted them to reconcile. So that's why he, after 2 years of not seeing his father, he burnt Yoav's field. Lemor lama bati migeshor, saying, why did I come from Geshor? V'im kein hare otali b'mashe v'etani lirushalayim. You did evil to me that you brought me to Jerusalem. Okay, so that's the motivation for burning the field, according to the Malbim. And then, v'yishach hamelech le Avshalom, gam b'zeh hera shelo yam lichuhu. Even with this kiss that we might think is this great reconciliation, it's showing us that he would never make him king. Shekvar katav ha-raiva, that's Rabbi Ibn Ezra, be parshat Toldot. So this is in Toldot, and I didn't look it up, so I don't know where it is. Shenishika im lamed hu biyad o beketef. When you say you're no shake le somebody, it means you kiss them on the hand or the shoulder. Ubli lamed hu bepeh. Without the lamed, it would be a direct kiss on the lips. If David had recognized Avshalom as the firstborn son who would inherit the kingship, he would have kissed him on the mouth. Instead, he just kissed him peripherally on the body. Okay? So even that kiss, which at first glance seemed to us as a reconciliation, is really putting Avshalom in his place. You are not the firstborn son who will inherit me. I'm not kissing you on the lips. I'm kissing you on the hand or the shoulder. Okay, and then my favorite. So, not really. It was a little relevant to this. It's actually taking a different tactic than what we just saw with the Malvim. But if you've been here before, my favorite Chashukei Chamed, when I have them. So if you look at the back page, the Chashukei Chamed is Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, and he's still alive. He was born in 1934. And this is the Chashukei Chamed is a collection of his questions and answers. One of my Rebbeim told me that they're made up. He makes them up to prove his point. So some of them might be true, some of them are made up. So he also has a book, Vaharevna, which is on the Parsha. So he organizes his questions and answers in Vaharevna according to the Parsha, and in Chashukei Chamed according to different pages of the Gemara where these things relate. Okay? So this is from Yevamot. I didn't figure out how exactly it related to the daf of Gemara. But the quotation, the topic is, Hayim tzarich levakesh et mechilat hanifka la'acher shenishku v'chatunato. Does this person need to ask forgiveness of the person that he hurt after that person kissed him at his wedding? Does that indicate enough forgiveness? Or does he have to explicitly ask for more? So here's the question. Shalav b'chor sho'el. So a young man asks, Lifnei mispar shanim, Pagati ubiziti barabin beofen nora et echad michavarai. Many years ago, I hurt and I shamed in public in a horrible way one of my friends. Leachar oto ivroa mitzaer. After this sad event, lo diber alai b'meshech tkufa aroka. He refused to speak to me for a long time. Vehadavar meod hitzikli, and it bothered me very much. Regashot chaim shel charata yasru oti. Difficult emotions of regret tortured me. Ratziti ma'od legeshet ulevakesh memenu mechila. I very much wanted to approach him and ask for forgiveness. Ach lo yadati eich v'ketzad lasot zot. But I didn't know how to do it. Be'echad hayamim, during these days, nodali ki hu omed lihitchaten be'ulam mesuyam. He was about to get married at a certain hall. V'hichlatati shekeit be'et simchat libo. I decided at the time when he would be so happy, ze hazman hamatim lavo levakesh mimenu mechila, that was the time to ask forgiveness. Bilel ha-simcha, the night of the simcha, nichnasti bera adal olam, I entered trembling into the hall. V'himtanti b'tzad ad acher chupa, I waited at the side until after the chupa. V'az kishechavrei ha-katan nikshu levarcho ulenashko, when all the friends of the Chatan approached him to bless him and to kiss him, Gamani nichnasti b'nehem, I also entered among them. U'keshehigati el Chatan, birachti v'nishakti oto. When I reached the Chatan, I blessed him and I kissed him. V'gamhu nishach v'chibek oti, b'chom. And he also kissed and hugged me with warmth. U'me'uchar yoter b'malach ha-simcha af rakadnu yachad. And even later, as the simcha wore on, we danced together. V'shato mishum ma haya barur li she'en shum makom lalot b'fnei yedidi et davar ha-pigi'a. So at that moment, it was clear to me that my friend was not thinking about that I had hurt him. Ki le'achar shekibati mimenu nishika v'chibuk levavi, because I got this kiss and this hug, this heartfelt kiss and hug, min hastam shekvar machali b'lev shalem. I assumed that he had forgiven me with a full heart. Ach atala, but now, le'achar shechalfu mispar chodashim, many months have passed, libi nokfi, and my heart beats. Shama adayin in viadi mechila gemora behanifka. Maybe he really hasn't totally forgiven me. Yoreini na kavod harav. Please instruct me, Rabbi. Hayim achin mutal alai lageshet shuv el yedidi ulevakesh mimenu ba'ofen mefurash mechila al she'olatala. Should I go approach him again to my friend and ask explicit forgiveness on what I did to him? Okay, so you see the problem? Okay. Shiva Vishut Rashi. So this answer is in Rashi. I saw the original Rashi in my search, but he includes it here. Mofia Hashela Haba'a. Here's the question that's asked Rashi. Ma'aseh Beruven Shehika et Shimon Ubiza'oto Me'od. So Reuven hit Shimon and shamed him a lot. Kafatz Shimon v'nishba. Shimon jumped up and he swore, he made an oath, Lo amcho l'Reuven olamit. I will never forgive Reuven. La'achar zman, after some time, avra chamato shel Shimon, Shimon's anger passed, uba v'sha'al, ha'im mutar lo l'nashek et Reuven v'lenhog imo b'chiba? Can Shimon kiss Reuven and act with him in a loving way? Okay, after he made this oath that he would never forgive him. V'hishiv Rashi, asur l'Shimon l'chabek v'lenashek l'Reuven. You are absolutely forbidden from ever hugging or kissing Reuven, ki ein lecha mechila gadol mizo, because the act of kissing and hugging your friend shows explicit forgiveness. There is no bigger way to show that you forgive him. V'harei nishba shelo limcholo, and you made an oath that you wouldn't forgive him. V'tzien lepasuk b'Shmuel, and he points to our pasuk. V'yashav Avshalom b'Yerushalayim shnatayim yamim upnei hamelech David aviv lo ra'ah. Avshalom sat in Jerusalem for 2 years and didn't see his father's face. V'zehaya machmat Amnon achiv shaharag, and this was because he killed Amnon, his brother. U'b'sha'at mechila kativ, and at the time that David clearly forgave him, it's written, V'yavo Yoav el hamelech v'egidlo v'yikra el Avshalom, v'yavo el hamelech v'yishtachulo apayim lifnei hamelech, and sorry, this is light, but that was my search term, v'yishak hamelech le'avshalom, and Avshalom kissed him. So those are our psukim of Avshalom indeed being invited to the palace by David after these 2 years, and David kissing him. Below mitzuyan b'pasuk she'David el Avshalom she'David amar le'Avshalom harini mochel u'mashma mikan she'nishika mechila me'aliyutahi. So we don't find it explicit in the text that David said to Avshalom, "Behold, you're forgiven," but this kiss shows is an effective way of forgiving. Ulam lechora yesh lehakshat sharei matzino etzel Yosef shenishuk vechibuk eino nechshev lemaase mechila. But we have another case where at first glance it would prove to be a difficulty to this case, where we see with Yosef that hugging and kissing is not considered an action of forgiveness. Shebe parshat vayigash lechar sheYosef hitvada leachiv. So in Vayigash, after Yosef made it known to his brothers, made himself known to his brothers, Omer ta Torah, the Torah tells us, V'yinashak Yosef l'chol echav v'yefk aleihem. Yosef kissed all his brothers, and he cried upon them. Hareish Yosef nishek lam, Yosef kissed them. U'b'kol zot, bakshumi menu achiv mechila b'sof parshat v'yechi. Despite this, at the end of parshat v'yechi, the brothers, at this after Jacob dies, and the brothers get worried that maybe Yosef will now take out revenge on them, they ask Yosef for forgiveness. So in other words, they didn't see this kissing in Parshat Vayigash as an explicit forgiveness, and they felt they had to ask again. Ana sana pesha achicha v'chatatam ki ra'ah gmolcha v'ata sana l'pesha avdi al ki avicha. So this is the pasuk where they're asking him explicitly for forgiveness. U'mivuar b'masachet Yoma, and explained in the Gemara, in Yoma, Sheseder Pius Chaviron Yomad Maase Yosef Achiv, that we actually learn the whole order of asking, of making up with your friend from Yosef and his brothers. Viduim Divrei Rabbeinu Bachaya, and also the words of Rabbeinu Bachaya are known, Lo Ra'inu She'azker Katov Mechila B'Yosef. We never saw that it mentions the word Mechila with Yosef, V'lo She'odelehem She'isab Sha'am V'chatatam, and that he didn't make it, it didn't seem like he was forgiving them. And it seems like they died in their crime without the mechila of Yosef. Because it would be impossible for them to atone their sin outside of Yosef's explicit forgiveness. And then they say, I think this is what it's saying, I'm not 100% sure, that because they didn't have explicit forgiveness from Yosef, they needed to be reincarnated to the 10 martyrs that we read about on Yom Kippur. And I think that's what it's talking about. Like, that's where they got their forgiveness. And but I don't know for sure if that's what it's referring to. So it seems to explain, Shenishuk Yosef l'achiv eino nidun kemechila.
that we can say that the kiss that Yosef gave to his brothers was not an explicit forgiveness. Mikivan shehad davar ira b'sha'at hitrakshut v'sa'arat nefesh, because this kiss happened in a very emotional and a stormful soul time.
A wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Lachar shanim rabot. After the brothers met each other after many years. V'du'im divrei ha'orachayim she'afilu bizman ha'mechira lo kata ayin ha'achva mi'yosef. And it's known from the words of the Orachayim that even while he was being sold, the aspect of brotherliness never dimmed from Yosef. He maintained it. And it's totally natural for brothers to kiss themselves in this kind of situation. Therefore, it's not so clear that this kiss looks like forgiveness. In comparison to this, the case of Rashi's tshuva, where it's just any kind of, without any reason, kissing and acting as if you like each other. Shelo b'nisivot miyocharet, not with a special reason. Kagon b'nidun hanishba shelo limchol l'chaviro, like the case where he swore he would never forgive his friend. Hu gilui lev shemabia hitpaisut u'mechila. This is a way of getting to reconciliation. V'chein Rashi asar al Shimon l'nashek Ruvin. And that's why Rashi made it forbidden for Shimon to kiss Ruvin. L'or ha-divarim. At first glance, near Ashamindidun Sha'alatenu, so going back to our original questioner, Hapogea Adain lo kibel et mechilat chavero, he has not yet received the forgiveness of his friend. Al afshanishchu bekatunah, because he kissed him at the wedding, exactly as you said, Lord. Mishum shenishikazo dinah kenishikat Yosef le'achiv. This kiss would be in the same category as Yosef kissing his brothers. Ukashem shesham henishika haita beregesh shal hitpartzut shal regesh ve'achva. And the kiss was at a moment of the bursting of the emotion of brotherliness. Kach gam kan. So also is it here. Nahugu mikubal shekhatan mechabek menashek l'kol mi shepogesh ve'et chatunato. Of course the chatan is going to hug and kiss anybody who comes to his wedding. Ve'en mikan hochecha shemachal b'chor shemagavo. And it's no proof that he forgave this guy. U'bishlema yim haya mevakesh et mechilat chatan bezman simcha ve'hal Vehala haya meshivlo ani mochalecha haino amrim shechala hamechila. And if he had explicitly asked his forgiveness at the wedding, and the chatan had said explicitly, "I forgive you," this would have been the beginning of forgiveness. Kemivuar begilyone hashas v'kedushin, like it says in the Gemara in Kedushin, shehamivayesh et chavaro v'kadoma u'machalo befiv, the one who embarrasses his friend or anything similar, and he forgives him with his mouth. Afal pi shelo machalo bilibo, even if he didn't forgive him in his heart, anu amrim beze gam kein divarim shebalev enam divarim. We say that whatever is going on in his heart doesn't matter. Achka sher lo shamanu shemocholo befirush. But in our case, where there was no explicit forgiveness coming out of his mouth, even let alone his heart, adain chala al habogea chovat bakashat mechila. It's still the one who injured. Still has the obligation to ask forgiveness. L'chsikum, ze shebega v'chavero, surich l'shuv v'chavero l'vekesh m'mena m'chila. He needs to go and ask him explicitly forgiveness. So, regardless, the Rabbi Zilberstein has a different feel than the Malbim on this kiss, and he thinks that this kiss was an actual act of forgiveness, whereas the Malbim says that this kiss, being on his hand or his shoulder, was just another act of distancing him from David HaMelech. So next week we will get into the heated actual rebellion of Absalom to David. Thank you.